Hey there, are you a happiness seeker? Have you survived trauma and pain? And are you ready to heal and transform? Then stay tuned in. You are listening to the Open to Happiness podcast, and I am your host, Nicoleta. Today, I will be exploring relational trauma and happiness with Trevor Rocca, polyvagal and trauma-informed coach from Gibraltar. Hello, Trevor, and very welcome to our Open to Happiness podcast.
Hi, thank you very much for having me. I'm excited to share this moment with you guys.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for your time and for everything. So, Trevor, where shall we start? Would you like maybe to share a little bit about you? Who are you and how was your journey in life so far?
Well, I come from a very little town called Gibraltar. It's in the southern tip of Spain. It's actually British.
Yes.
So the accent comes from, I think, the neighboring country, which is Spain. So I've been brought up in a very mostly Spanish household where everyone spoke Spanish.
Yes.
And at the age of 15, 16, joined the army, had a couple of careers in that space. At the age of 25, I was very lucky to come across the world of personal training, which I found fascinating how the physical aspect could really regulate someone's sort of lifestyle, essentially, without knowing this. So I went into the physical world because I thought I'm going to help people lose weight. But I found that the benefits of working out was beyond that.
Right.
So after spending some time doing personal training, I found myself in a bit of a pickle because I was giving a lot of advice. We spend a lot of time as personal trainers. You spend a lot of time with clients in a very sort of personal space where clients do share. You become friends. And as a personal trainer, you tend to give advice. What I was noticing is that most of the advice I was giving, sometimes it didn't make sense. I wasn't sure what I was saying. So in order to sort of be better at that, I guess, I did a master's in coaching and mentorship, and that really helped me. So I started moving away from the personal training into the coaching, executive coaching, and again, I came across a little block, and that was trauma. I found my clients coming with a lot of trauma and not being able to have that clear idea on goal setting. Why? Because that past was kidnapping the present moment.
Right.
So in the last couple of years, I've immersed myself completely in trauma work. I've done a couple of qualifications. I'm working with incredible, amazing people around the world. I've been extremely lucky that I think we come together in the trauma industry. We always come together to support each other. And that's been incredible. So now I'm here. I'm working with one client at a time. I become their companion, I become the person that regulates them. I become the person that is willing to say what not everyone is willing to tell them. And I support them through a period of time. So my contracts are normally from 6 months to 12 months. With my current client, who is extremely special, I've been here for 2 years now.
Wow, that sounds fantastic. It's quite unusual, really, in this space of healing to have such long-term commitment as a professional yourself, but also for the client to embark on such long-term commitment, because it can be a little bit frightening for people beyond the financial cost and different other logistic aspects, you know. I wonder how they cope with having someone really there for them for such a long time. I suppose there are benefits, but also times of resistance. I'm assuming.
I know, absolutely. And what we come across is we developed each other's personalities as we go along. As we know, we're not the same person that we were yesterday. So in the space of 2 years, the person changes. And one of the things that I'm big on is psychoed. And that means psychoeducational therapy. My clients will speak to me now as if they were trauma-informed themselves. They will actually say, hey, I'm in my sympathetic nervous system today. I'm fight or flight. And I'm trying to regulate, and I'm trying to go into ventral, and I feel my stomach, that could be dorsal, and the language used in that space is very psycho-ed, which I love. One of the things that I have learned in my practice is if understanding is there, self-blame and shame disappear. So once they understand what's actually going on with them from a neurobiological perspective or even from a body to mind perspective, they feel a bit that there's a state of compassion that comes in and say, okay, just be compassionate with yourself. It's okay, you're human. You've gone through all of this and your nervous system is showing up. So when I get that call at maybe 2 o'clock in the morning and I say, hey, what's going on? They'll be like, I've just woken up and I can't sleep and my heart rate is going and I feel like I'm in this state. So we work on tools to regulate.
Really beautiful. I can't wait to dive a little bit deeper into this and find out how you're working and what was the results that you're getting. So you find it attractive in a way to be in the healing world very early in life. Was there anything in particular that prompted you into choosing personal training, working with the body first?
Not necessarily. I think it was more of a career move, if I'm very honest. I've always been quite sporty, ex-army, fit. I knew that it worked for me. At the age of 16, I remember there used to be this gym around the corner from my house, and I couldn't afford to go to the gym, so I used to sneak in at like 5:30 in the morning to do a workout in the gym. So it's always been part of my life, the physical aspect of it. Little did I know that this was going to open up for me a career on healing. In my wildest dreams, I could have thought the relationship between mind and body was there. I didn't have the education to be able to understand that. So yeah, I was very grateful for that, yes.
Well, things happen for a reason, and
Absolutely.
even the most difficult and challenging aspects of our lives bring a
Absolutely.
bit of wisdom and a bit of lesson if we are willing to look and see. What I'm hearing is that you're obviously quite lively as a person yourself,
Yes, thank you
quite
very much.
active, quite
I am.
active, and you want to tap into this sense of aliveness and vitality. And then naturally, you had to go through the physicality of it before you moved into much deeper work with your clients. But more the question was about whether you experienced some adversity yourself that
Of
prompted you
course.
to search into this healing world.
Yes, of course. This is what I found at a later stage. The reason why I was obsessed with going to the gym was self-soothing. I really was trying to regulate in a particular way that makes sense for me. I was very lucky that I never turned into drugs or alcohol. I just turned into training and physical training and going through that sort of pain. And I think there is a correlation between trauma and physical endurance.
No, absolutely, it
And
is.
we've and
Yes.
we've known this, right? So I believe I felt into that spectrum. I came from a family that, even though we were very tight, emotional affection wasn't there. And I think that's what I needed. They were great parents, great family, but that emotional aspect was missing. And me as a human being, I'm very emotional, very connected. So I missed that. And I think for many years, I questioned that in my own life, trying to figure out what is a part of me that was missing. And that's what I think training gave me. It gave me the ability to take control of my own emotions. And that where obviously that it's pain. You're taking your body to a limit. I also did an Ironman or half an Ironman, but I was training 6 to 7 hours a day. So I think there was a relation between that attachment at home and how I ended up was very much a gradual progression and a natural step for me.
Yes, because in a way, what you're describing a young man that is now empowered, that feels empowered to, take ownership of his life, self-inquire, how am I? Why do I feel connected? Why do I love this type of relational life? And what was actually missing in my childhood? And how do
Absolutely.
I reconcile between the man that I am today and the child that maybe had some developmental deficits? And I think the training, whether it's, physical or mental or spiritual, whatever practice we go through, it always taps into all of the others. It's not like we just work with the body, as you release endorphins into the body, the mind will start to feel differently, isn't it? And as you work a
Serotonin.
little bit with the mind, the body will also you know,
Yes.
experience a different kind of boost. And so what you're doing, you're talking about a sense of relational trauma that didn't happen with intention. It didn't happen in a conscious space. It was just the, you know, the nature of things. This is how families are. This is how people behave. This is how they've been shaped. This is what they've learned. And I lack that emotional connection with my parents as well, so I can relate to that.
Okay.
So now if we shift this gradually into what is trauma really for you, how would you talk about trauma these days?
Trauma is the inability to be in the present moment. But the thing with the past is that it's not really the past. We are transcendent beings. I can visualize now a moment that from my past and live that emotion, as well as I can envision something that could potentially happen and live that emotion already. So I think trauma as a heading would be not being seen or heard at one particular time in your life, and you carry that, because in order to be able to survive, there's coping mechanisms which essentially shape your behavior. And what we do, as you know, we go back into that spot and said, okay, so let's just find out where this behavior came from, and let's try to understand it a bit better.
And throughout your work now with different clients, have you noticed a particular tendency and trend around relational trauma? Has it happened early in life? Is it happening, you know, throughout the years? Is it happening even in adult life? Well, what's your learning from that?
But my take on relational trauma now, as I see it, is driven by guilt. And it's a shame, because it's a shame, and guilt are brothers. They constantly show up in our work. Do I see it more than often? I can speak from the clients I've had, and I think that we all carry shame. But it's, again, coming back to using compassion as a tool. So when we have a lot of shame and guilt, we work on those, we understand where they come from. And then I use a lot of tools of compassion, coming back to using compassion, say to compassion, in order for them to understand themselves and also to have compassion to those around them. Remember, my understanding of racial trauma is there's a moment that there's two individuals and one of them has a bigger authority and uses that authority as a way of abuse or neglect or whatnot. And sometimes it happens without the parents even knowing. So what I do is I go back and I allow my client to understand or try to come to terms with the intention behind of those moments where they say, well, you know, my mom never came to school to pick me up. And that in itself, there's a story which I often say, and this was a client of mine many years back. She was dealing with, struggling with a lot with rejection. And we did a float back, and it ended. The moment that she started for her was she was in a park with an ice cream fell on her, and the mum pushed her away. And that moment there created the blueprint for the rest of our life in terms of rejection. So we went back to that space, and we got there, and we did the EMDR and desensitized that memory for her. But yeah, but relational trauma, I think, any sort of relationship is going to have some sort of trauma.
I agree.
Because it's impossible. It's impossible for us to understand each other. So it's cool.
I truly believe the same. So now, how do you feel that trauma impacts our lives and, you know, maybe blocks our happiness, our openness towards joy and whatever the life, this gift of life has for us?
I think we need to understand as well, I think there is a wider conversation on trauma and inconvenience. I think that we are coming across a narrative now that trauma is everywhere. And I agree with that to a certain extent. There's moments of inconvenience and there's moments of trauma. There are moments in your past life that that trauma does disrupt the way that you are now. And the way that we find out is how your nervous system shows up constantly. So if you're an anxious person and you're in a state of anxiety constantly, you might fully regulate, but unless you sort of address that, that's constantly going to be there. And we see this in society nowadays. Our society has been driven by the masses. I'm expected to buy a new car. I'm expected to buy the bigger house. I'm expected to get married and have a wedding of £100,000 wedding. I'm having clients coming through. Those the sort of trauma that they're living. They're actually living a trauma. And the trauma is coming through the pressure and expectations of society.
Yeah, that's an important aspect, isn't it? It's social trauma in a way. It's comparison, it's pressure on performance and achievement. And
precisely.
We internalize it in our own way. And of course, we become our worst enemies in a way.
Precisely.
In the way we treat ourselves and we lead our lives out there. So talk a little bit about your polyvagal theory. I mean, not yours, but your understanding of
Stephen Porges.
Yes, I know. How do you actually integrate this into your work?
So I have a friendly amendment to the polyvagal theory. And that there is obviously the ventral, which is when the state of connectedness, the moment that you feel at one with everyone, your vagus nerve is relaxed and it feels creative, right? Then you have the state of sympathetic nervous system, and that's your fight or flight as we know it. And then you have your dorsal, which is your total collapse. How I integrate that is through a state of compassion. I include another state there. So the moment I give my clients tools, or we work on tools that work for them. So for example, I've got clients that nature is very restorative. For them, the moment that they feel they are stepping into that state of protection and they're being extremely flexible on states, they will come to a place and say, okay, I need nature. And nature could be as simple as going down in the garden and pressing their feet against the floor, finding those tools. So I am very tools-based. There's a beautiful documentary, and it's called Studs on Netflix. And it's a doctor that deals with a celebrity, and he talks about tools a lot. And I think what I do with my polyvagal is exactly the same. It's understanding what the triggers are and understanding what your glimmers are. Your glimmers are the moments of joy that brings a vagal tone to your life, which is a stability of being able to be flexible. We can't be rigid either. We can't constantly be in a ventral state where we're very happy and connected. There needs to be a moment that you go down into your sympathetic and come up, and even into your dorsal, as long as it's done correctly. So coming back to your question is, I give them tools. We work on tools that work for them.
Cool. What is in plain language for people for, you know,
oh, sorry. So plain language would be,
and watching. Yeah. What is the understanding beyond it?
So it'll be meditation. It'll be yoga. It'll be anything that brings you into your moment. The idea of the polyvagal theory is to bring you to the present moment, that you can actually regulate yourself through vagal through your breathing behaviors and techniques. In layman's terms, is what happens. So your vagus nerve gets irritated and it wants to defend you. It wants to protect you. There is a term that Stephen Porges coined as neuroceptions. You know, when you go to a bar and you're feeling fine and you go in there and out of nothing, you feel anxious. And you're like, okay, what's happening? I was fine outside and I'm feeling really anxious in here. That's called neuroception. There's no cognitive behavior or conscious mind there. That is your subconscious showing up in order to protect you. There's something within that space that comes from your past that's showing up here. So what do? We give them tools. So if you find yourself in this situation again, have something in your pocket where you can hold. And there's a lot of clients that carry coins nowadays, and they use the coins in order to regulate them. I come back to the same thing. I come back to tools are crucial for regulation.
So we start from the premises that if we have a traumatic response, if there is a trigger in this present moment of something that has been left unhealed, unresolved from the past, if it's a flashback to something or whatever it is, a reminder of something that happened at an unconscious level, there will be physiological changes within us.
Absolutely.
And we will enter a state of dysregulation from the nervous system down to the vagus nerve. And then, obviously, the person will experience a state that is quite unpleasant, quite unstable, quite not in balance, right? And how do we really, what kind of tools do you use in your work to help people heal and maybe manage, like you said, you give them tools to manage their trauma. You don't really work on healing. So how, what kind of tools do you give them? What do they learn?
Well, we need to understand that trauma has, for me, has like 6 points. It's got physiological, it's got psychological, emotional, social, mind, body, and metaphysical. And in all those stages, they will require different tools. Most of the tools I give my clients is vagal breaking, which is the breathing techniques, which are crucial in terms of if you are in a space where you can't really go into nature or you can't go for a run, whatever works for the person. I give them EMDR and I do safe space. Have you heard of EMDR before?
Yes.
You know what EMDR is?
Yes.
So for those that do not know, it's eye movement, desensitization, and reprocessing. And what we do is by using bilateral stimulation, we allow our limbic system to open up and to process moments and memories in a way that makes a lot of sense, right? It sort of speeds up the memory processing of all the moments processing in the moment. So I allow them to self-soothe. Self-soothing in order to do some bilateral stimulation. That's one of the tools I use, and it's extremely effective. Obviously, before we go into that, my client goes through weeks of doing bilateral stimulation with me for them to understand where they can go and where what is it they can do or not do in that space, which is crucial. But most of the tools I give is, because of my personal trainer background, I think everything is very physical. So either you go for a walk, you co-regulate, which is crucial. I think people don't understand that co-regulation is crucial to self-regulation. Before you self-regulate, you need to co-regulate. And co-regulation means finding those individuals around your in your life that act as a happy anchor. You know, when you meet someone in your family or friend, that the moment you see them, automatically your nervous system drops, you feel connected. Those are the people that you need in your speed dial. Those are the people that you need to send a message to and say, hey, I've chosen you as one of my eventual anchors. And would you mind that if I go through this space, would you mind if I reach out to you? Because I know that speaking to you allows me to regulate. So my clients have what they call is a square space, square squad, and they identify individuals which they can reach out in moments of distress, which is crucial.
It is important indeed, because I think without this modulation between us, because we impact each other, isn't it? We do really co-regulate our internal functioning, not just at the nervous system level, but all of the other systems in us actually synchronize and vibrate with each other. It's so important to really have that kind of support. So you're talking about working with the body, re-embodying our lives, being back home, becoming aware of what's going on in here, also being out in the nature. It's so beautiful. Your practice is very holistic. So going out into the nature, reconnecting back with the source of everything, and then having someone there to offer you the support where you feel a little bit held, you feel a little bit contained, and you enjoy that, because that's actually healing your developmental deficit that has created a trauma in the first place. It's a beautiful way of working with clients. And what are the results generally? What do you see happening when you give people these tools, and what's happening really?
It's so interesting, because what I found in the last maybe 2 or 3 years is they get a superpower. It's a power of regulation, I call it. And the moment that they are feeling dysregulated, they find the purpose to regulate. It's beyond me. Like, they might be in a moment of stress and I could see them laughing, but they say, okay, I know what I'm doing. I'm going to take care of this in this particular way. And it's extremely empowering, where you say, okay, this person came to me from a place of being all over the place, having a very unhealthy diet, la la la. And now every time she finds a nervous system showing up, she'll be eager to find out how quick she can regulate. And she'll call me and say, hey, I had a panic attack. And within 5 minutes, I was fine because I did this and the other. So they find that purpose. And I think one of my biggest goals within the next year is to get this word called stress out of our vocabulary, because I want them to start calling it dysregulation. If we get clinicians to call it dysregulation instead of stress, I can guarantee you 70% of the patients that go into a GP will take it as a purpose and saying, hey, okay, I'm dysregulated, I can regulate. Whereas now what we're finding is people are going into GPs and saying, okay, you're stressed, take two tablets. But we can sort of educate people that the moment that you're dysregulated, we can regulate you by just in a holistic approach. That would be my goal for 2024, I think. I'm pushing this really hard right now.
Wow, this sounds fantastic, Trevor. Honestly, it does.
Thank
because
you.
In a way, making the distinction between stress and dysregulation, it's absolutely essential. It's bringing the power back to the individual, isn't it?
Precisely.
Because in the eyes of stress, what you make of stress, you know?
Precisely.
If you think of stress as being there, unavoidable, you can do nothing about it, that means you've already given up, you know, your power to whatever might happen, to whatever forces outside of you that might impact your life. But if you look at this as being whatever happens, we don't name them, whatever they are, either it's in the outside world or in our internal functioning, it is a sense of dysregulation, which reminds me that I have the power, I have the way, I have the means to rebalance myself. And I think this old story that we developed in the modern world around stress is necessary, stress is actually quite good for different reasons. Stress will always be there. I think it's a myth in a way, if you think about it, because yes, the world is, you know, life is unfolding, the world is moving, many things happen. Some of them would be pleasant, others maybe a bit unpleasant, if you want to label them. But beyond that, you will always have the ability, the capacity to move up and down in your functioning. And it's not important if you are exposed to stress, you know, or not. What's important is that you create a bandwidth of self-regulation.
Precisely, the window of tolerance is crucial. I think that coming back to what you just said, to add on that, I completely agree with this. And I think the word stress has been misunderstood as discomfort, or discomfort as stress. It's okay to be in a very uncomfortable situation as long as you're growing, because that's the reality of life. But let's not call it stress. Right now, you're going through a moment that you're readapting. People still call it stress, and they give this promotion to stress as a good thing, but really it's not. So you might be dysregulated, of course, because you're adapting to a new thing in your life. That's okay, but we're going to find regulation through this new thing that you're doing. And it's all about finding the tool to regulate you whilst you go through that discomfort to get you to the next stage. And that could be university, it could be medical school, it could be anything, buying a new house, getting into a new mortgage, it could be anything that could potentially dysregulate you. Okay, this is discomfort, it's inconvenient. Let's keep on pushing on regulation. Let's try and get you to a place where on a daily basis, you come to terms to your present moment. Okay, you've got the power. Like you just said, I've got the power to be able to regulate. The moment that you teach someone that they have the power, they will maximize that. And this is what I've learned. Coming back to the question, is what have I seen? I've seen people being extremely proud of regulation. Like I've got my client now, and he'll call me and say, Trev, I was in a bad place this morning. Didn't call you, didn't text you. I regulated myself, went down to the beach, and I just sat there and regulated myself for 5 minutes. We can live right beside the beach. I'll be like, amazing, well done to you. You need me less now. And it'd be like, yeah, great. And I think it's important for us to have that as clinicians.
Absolutely. So wonderful. It is indeed, because sometimes we forget that we have this resource in us. Because we follow the mind and that kind of, you know, incessant trail of thinking. We just keep following. We don't really take a moment to be present to what's unfolding right now and come in touch with this. And I think the power of mindfulness and presence cannot be underestimated. And I'm so pleased when I see people, you know, taking time for themselves in integrating this into their self-care practice. So you're talking a lot about conscious awareness, becoming more mindful, being present, and doing your best to bring yourself back into a state of self-regulation. The sooner, as soon as possible.
Yes, and it's so interesting because this conversation has brought up another memory that I've had. A couple of weeks ago, I went out for lunch with another colleague. He's a psychotherapist, and we went into a conversation of psychoed, and we started going to neurobiology, la 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 la. And he says, "Don't you think that sometimes we just need to be there for them?" And I said, "Yeah, you go into the world of psychoed that you forget that the biggest tool that we have is being there. Our presence cannot be faked. So just being there with the client is a massive tool."
Yeah, indeed. So true, because very often we keep our eyes on the outside world, hoping to get the answers from there, and we forget about this wisdom that we carry within ourselves, this knowing, this intelligence that is in there. So true. Wow, very, very pleasant talking to you about this.
Thank
I
you
absolutely
very much.
Love the way you work. Towards the end of the podcast now, Trevor, maybe you can share with us now the best three teachings you have for our listeners and watchers to live a happy and fulfilling and balanced and yogic and, you know, whatever, special life.
Yes. So the first one would be a gentle reflection. It is crucial for us to look back on moments that I could potentially had an impact on another system and really in detail find out what's around it. The other one would be confidence is a result of what you do. So there's a lot of people that believe that confidence, you need to have the confidence to do something. I think confidence is as a result of doing something. And the last one, which is very dear to me, which is you're human, it's okay. We're human, it's okay. It's okay to feel what you feel. It's okay to be where you are. As long as you know, coming back, that you have the tools to be able to find more.
Beautiful. So gentle reflection. I think self-reflection is essential for all of us, irrespective of whether we're
Fantastic.
Working with trauma or just we're dealing with something that is happening right now. Confidence arises from your own actions, which means it's up to you really if you want to, you know, to feel confident in this very moment. And that's going to influence the outcome of your life. And then be human, it's okay to go through this. It's in a way, it's the surrender to what is and the acceptance of the nature of life, which makes it much easier to actually move into a state of learning and forgiveness and
That's
healing and transformation. Beautiful.
That's it.
Yeah. Oh, Trevor, thank you so much. It's been amazing to chat with you. Many thanks for your time. Many thanks for the wisdom you share with everyone, for your teachings. Where can people find out a bit more about you if they want to work with you or check out your work?
Well, LinkedIn. Go onto my LinkedIn. I normally post every couple of days a little quote or a little story. But yes, through that. I've got a little website, but I don't really use it because I do believe that connection happens with conversations. So if they want to reach out, come and reach out. We'll have a chat and see where you can go.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Trevor.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
You have listened to the Open to Happiness podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, show us your love, share, subscribe, or give us a review. Thank you.